It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. On today's program, we're joined by Dory Beats, who is the Assistant Director of Tuolumne County's Office of Emergency Services. We're going to get into some topics, notably some new sirens that are going to go on live in Tuolumne County. And OES Assistant Director Beats, it's great to have you back on Motherlode Views.
Well, thanks, as always, for having me, BJ.
So these new sirens, tell us about, you know, where they're going to be located or where they are located and how they're going to work.
Yeah, so we have three currently right now, sirens that are up and running and we can activate. They are in Groveland, Tuolumne City area, and the Twain Hart area. And we just finished an agreement with those individuals, the property owners who house the devices, and then obviously through Tuolumne County, the sheriff's office will have the ability to activate those remotely when we need them. We are working on two others, and that is in the Cold Springs area and Strawberry along the Highway 108 corridor.
So those first three that are there, you said Groveland, Tuolumne, and Twain Hart, are they on private property then or public property?
No, they are on public property. So they are associated with either a fire district, and all three of them are associated with a fire district, or in Groveland's case, it's with Groveland Community Service District. And so those are the entities that we have agreements with for the installation as well as the activation and just, you know, how those will be operated.
So what is kind of the grand purpose of these fire sirens?
So sirens are a layer of emergency alert notification system, and sirens, the three that are installed, are the new terminology is outdoor audible alerts, and they are simply a mechanism for us to alert mass numbers of the public in an outdoor setting. So in our particular instance, we, Tuolumne County Sheriff, Tuolumne County Fire, Tuolumne County OAS, it is our role to assist, you know, in the event of an emergency and evacuations. So these sirens will be used if we issue evacuations in any of those areas.
And have there been any tests yet of the sirens, or is that going to take place in the future?
Yeah, so there have been just tests with the software and the company that installed them. But we will be working tests through our office and obviously the sheriff's office in the future, because we want individuals to know, you know, what it sounds like. And then also we'll do some, you know, proactive early engagement with the public to understand that if you hear this, this is what we want you to do.
And you said it's just for one central reason, and that's evacuations?
Yes. At this time, we will only be using the sirens for evacuation purposes.
And could that be wintertime if we had flooding or anything like that?
Yep. Anytime that we deem it's necessary to evacuate an area. And again, the evacuation authority comes from the sheriff's office. If there is a need to evacuate individuals and we feel that the sirens will be beneficial in alerting the public, we will use them.
And not to be confused with one that's already in Columbia, right, that's going off during the noon hour?
Yes, and so that's a historic a siren that goes off that many of the residents there are very familiar with. That siren goes off every day at 12 noon to designate the lunch hour. So when you hear that siren, it does not mean evacuations.
And you can actually put messages through these sirens, is that correct?
Yeah, so the technology is pretty phenomenal, and you have the ability to put, you know, verbal messaging out as well in different languages. But we are going to focus and concentrate on, you know, that tonal alert so that people become familiar with that. We will probably eventually work into the ability to do the verbal messaging, understand from the alerting authority or who pushes the, you know, activation button, they would have to type in that message in order for it to be activated. So we're going to focus in the early stages just on the tonal alert so that folks get used to that.
Okay, so eventually, though, if you have different languages on the siren, is that kind of a state requirement, too?
Yeah, so the state is coming down, depending on the demographics and the percentage of language spoken in your county. We are required to offer out the messaging in those languages. So it could be done in different languages as well.
So if there was, say, like a fire in Twain Hart and it was like a certain neighborhood was going to be evacuated, would the siren go off and that type of thing?
Yeah, and so the hard part with outdoor audible alerts is topography as well as other conditions, wind, et cetera. And so even though there were tests done to show kind of the circle of where individuals might hear it, and in their first testing, you know, some people heard it and some people did not. Remember that the sirens are really made for outdoors. So you could be inside your house and not hear the siren. And again, it depends on location. If your home is right under the siren, you probably would hear it inside. But the farther you're away from it, depending on wind, depending on topography, if you have a hill in between you, et cetera, there are some variances, and it will depend on the conditions of that day. So it's not an automatic, everyone will hear it within a certain circumference.
Yeah, so if you live in Twain Hart, Groveland, Tuolumne, you shouldn't just expect to be woken up from the siren then.
Exactly. And again, the sirens are a layer. We have our emergency alert notification through Everbridge that we ask everyone to sign up for as another layer. We really are trying to improve the different layers that we can communicate and alert individuals when there is true need of an emergency or an evacuation.
So local residents can probably tune into Motherload Views, find out what's happening this morning. How about the people who are coming from out of state, out of the region, who make this a tourist destination throughout the year?
Well, we're working on that. It's definitely a gap that we have in our what I would call education. Educating our visitors is still something that we are working with. We obviously have great partners with Visit Tuolumne, who have on their webpage as well as some brochures that encourage individuals, especially visitors, to understand that they are coming to a high fire severity zone and that we might have evacuations. We are going to work to improve that and either create brochures or mechanisms, whether it is with our partners at VRBOs or Airbnbs or hotels, to make sure the visitors understand that if they hear that siren, what they need to do in the event.
So it's a good way to get everybody's attention. I imagine, too, you know, check your Everbridge, check, turn on the radio station, turn on mymotherload.com if you hear those, because there could be a lot of uncertainty if you just hear a siren and don't know where to evacuate.
Yes, and that is our message. If you hear the siren, we want you to know that an evacuation has been ordered. So that means you need to be tuning into those official notifications. So Sheriff's Facebook page, OES's Facebook page, County Fire Facebook page, but definitely to the local radio stations and My Motherload, because we obviously communicate with you to make sure we're getting that information so you can post it on your My Motherload and internet, etc. So,
and then what's kind of the plan moving forward when it comes to testing these and putting them live?
Well, the three, Groveland, Tuolumne, and Twain Hart, are live right now. So we have the ability to activate them when needed. Again, we're working on the agreements with Strawberry and Cold Spring. So those should hopefully come online here soon. As far as testing, we definitely need to look at once all five of them are online, we will schedule a test and then do some public education campaign prior to that test.
Has a lot been going on the scenes to get to this point? Because I imagine, you know, it sounds like a simple thing, just you know, having sirens go off. But I imagine there's a lot of coordination that has to take place.
Yeah, it has definitely been, I think, a couple of years in the making. Coordination, making sure we all agree what they will be used for, as well as the messaging. Obviously working with those entities who are supporting the placement of sirens on their property. So it's been a great partnership, and it's been great to see that we can expand those layers of communication with our public.
And the sheriff's office being the official decision maker when it comes to evacuations, do you say that only the sheriff's office has access to fire these sirens?
Yes,
off?
That is a part of the agreement, is that initiation or activation will come from the sheriff's office.
Need to take a break. We're talking with Dori Beetz, who is the Assistant Director of Tuolumne County's Office of Emergency Services. We're talking to her on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherlode Views. I'm PJ Hansen, your host, joined this weekend on the show by the Assistant Director of Tuolumne County Office of Emergency Services, Dori Beetz, talking about some new sirens initially that are being unveiled in Tuolumne County that alert people in the event of an evacuation being needed. You know, anything more you'd like to just add about these sirens?
Yeah, I would really like to acknowledge Supervisor Kirk and his work to initiate the use of the sirens, as well as the board collectively who approved the use of the sirens and ultimately, you know, directed our office working with the sheriff and fire to educate the public about the use of sirens. It is a work in progress. We hope that once all five are online, we will take some time to understand and study and see whether or not we want to expand beyond those five. Again, it is a tool. It is a layer for us and may not always work in every instance or condition. But if we could alert, you know, a handful of folks that we normally would not have been able to alert, then it is a true benefit. So we're excited about seeing how this will help prepare our community, but also educate and alert our community in the event of an evacuation.
You know, this next question might be a challenge because of the topography, as you mentioned, but do you know how far these sirens can go out?
No, I don't know the specifics on each of them. Obviously, the whole terminology and the technology behind the outdoor audible alerts definitely, depending on the system, varies. And it really is affected by the topography and wind and other, you know, potential conditions that might exist on that particular day.
Next thing I want to ask you a little bit about is cell phone outages. We had a major one about a month ago. That's an issue with our infrastructure here in the Motherlode region. You know, what kind of challenges has the lack of cell phone coverage kind of posed for this area?
Well, we August 30th, actually, we had a large cell outage that definitely impacted 911 system. Most individuals don't know that we have one fiber optic, that's AT&T, that comes into Tuolumne County, and many of the other cell providers rely upon that fiber optic. And when that is damaged, then it impacts multiple systems. We definitely understand that the community as a whole, including businesses, are often impacted by a cell outage. But we are obviously focused right now on making sure that we improve the system and we have a backup plan to our backup plan to ensure that we can have an up-and-running 911 system, and also that the communications amongst our first responders, whether it's law enforcement, fire, EMS, our hospital, we can all speak to one another during an event. We had a recent meeting with those cell providers, both Verizon and AT&T. I think we all learned a lot about what can be done and then what we need to do ourselves, including the possibility of purchasing cell on wheels, or they're called cows, to have readily available for our use in the event of cell outage. It's a work in progress, but understand that we are definitely, it's on our radar, and it's something that we're committed to fixing and figuring out ways to improve that system within our county.
Yeah, that August incident, the sheriff's office put out a release indicating it could be, you know, vandalism and damaged lines and whatnot. So a backup plan, it would be like that cell on wheels?
Yes. So we had an internal backup plan of communication, but without that cell and that ability to do to hook into something right away, the providers have those mechanisms, but it could be 3 to 7 hours before they can actually get here with that type of device. So we are looking at purchasing something on our own through grant funding so that we can have ready to go and our IT folks can hook up to it right away.
Are those pretty expensive?
We heard from our partners north of us in Calaveras that they purchased one for about $56,000.
Okay. Yep. Is the PG&E outage is something that you also weigh in on when it comes to OES?
Yeah, absolutely. We are in direct contact with folks who from PG&E that represent this county. And so every time there is a power outage, we are updated. We also are watching that from an OES perspective. Depending on the conditions, obviously during extreme weather, whether it's heat or cold, our offices are prepped and ready to open up shelters if extended power outages do occur. So it is something we do pay attention to. We also are obviously very involved in any updates to the systems within Tuolumne County. That is obviously a concern by our Board of Supervisors and a county as a whole to make sure that we have that infrastructure so that all of the power can stay on for everyone, not just the first responders, but obviously everyone that lives here and works here in Tuolumne County.
They remind me the county has like certain criteria when it comes to opening, you know, outage centers and that type of thing. You know, have all these recent outages kind of spurred some changes at the county level when it comes to opening those?
Yeah, so we have an extreme temperature contingency plan, but we are, when power does go out, we look at the temperature. Obviously, July we had some heat, obviously, and some power outages, and we've learned to make sure that we're monitoring what they call the ETOR, which is the estimated time of restoral, so that if we think it's going to be longer, definitely during the heat of the day, or for example, going into winter, if it's going to be longer, then we will activate and staff those shelters so that we can provide assistance to those who most need it.
I imagine to your defense, it's got to be a challenge because sometimes PG&E says, oh, the power should be back on in 3 or 4 hours, then 2 days later, we're still without electricity. So that's hard to juggle and weigh.
It is very hard to juggle, BJ, because we look at those estimations and you're exactly right. It could say 4 hours and we normally would not activate, a sheltering in 4 hours. But if it goes extended past that 8 or, you know, we definitely want to provide things that are overnight or 24 hours. The general rule for extended power outage, if defined, I guess, is 24 hours. But we understand that depending on the conditions, 8 hours or 12 hours definitely can impact many of our vulnerable community members. And we want to address that and be ready for that.
So in those situations where it could be these extended outages, is PG&E pretty good about communicating with the county to let you know what you need to prepare for?
Yes, I have a direct line. And the minute the power goes off, I'm texting or they're texting me saying, hey, this is what we're anticipating. Or it might be longer than what is showing up in the system. And so they've been very good about letting us know because they understand that we have to make a decision at some point. And the sooner we know, the sooner we can activate and get those staff there and open something up.
For people who are curious, the kind of change to the increased amount of outages, I mean, this is kind of a question for PG&E, but can you kind of explain a little bit about why we're seeing more outages?
You know, we went through the round years ago with PSPS, right? So the planned power outages related. And now that's shifted to the EPSS, which is really based on conditions, right? It's wind, it's things that might have fallen on a line. And understanding, I have a better understanding, obviously, that many might, the amount of work that it takes to put the power back on. And rightfully so, PG&E has to go out and inspect all of those lines in order before they re-energize it. And we want them to do that because if they re-energize and there's been a tree down on the line, then we could start a fire. And so if you understand the simplicity of that, then you can appreciate that there's a lot of work that they have to do depending on the circuit and the line and where the power is out. It doesn't make it easy. I think whether you believe in climate change or not, we have weather that is changing. We're seeing more extreme types of weather behavior. And so that impacts power outages. And that just means our office has to be ready for multiple things because it just means we're going to be constantly challenged with how can we provide assistance to definitely the most vulnerable communities in those situations.
Need to take one more break. We're talking with Dori Beetz, the Assistant Director of Tuolumne County's Office of Emergency Services. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherload Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Our final segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're talking preparedness and Office of Emergency Services items with the Assistant Director of the Tuolumne County Office of Emergency Services, Dory Beetz, on this weekend's Motherload Views. And next thing I want to ask you about is a little bit about National Preparedness Month. That was last month, September. I know you were at the Board of Supervisors meeting to talk about that. What were kind of the main points that you wanted to remind the community about when it comes to preparedness?
Well, first and foremost is preparedness is a personal responsibility. We really, truly need everybody in Tuolumne County to be prepared. And what does that mean? Any time during the year, there can be a disaster. And we obviously this last year saw multiple disasters during the winter season or spring season. And we're headed into that possibly same scenario this year where we're going to have a lot more water than in precipitation than we anticipate. But we want everyone to be ready. And preparedness means, having that go bag. It is really important that every family member has a go bag and that you revisit that go bag. So, you know, you might have had a go bag for the summer months. Well, now you might need to change some of the items, especially your clothing in the go bag for the winter months. Also, too, signing up for our emergency alert notification system. We are very excited that, you know, in the last 2 years, we've increased the number of individuals that have signed up from 33,000 to 77,000. That's huge. And we want to continue to make sure that everybody, regardless of their age, if you have a landline, a cell phone, or an email, that you sign up with our emergency alert notification system. And it's easy to do. You can go to our webpage. You can also call our office. I'll give the number towards the end, but we want to make sure that folks are signing up for that emergency alert. The other part of preparedness is having a plan. Whether you live on your own or you have a family or it's just you and your pets, have a plan. And that means at any given time, whether you're home or not, if there's an evacuation order or, for example, there's a winter storm and you can't get back home or the winter storm is coming, making sure that you have a plan and you are truly prepared. It is the best help to our first responders if you are personally prepared for any type of disaster, because that means you're ready to go. That means you've thought about all of the what ifs for your home and your family. And so we really ask folks to take time, have a conversation at the dinner table about preparedness and what to do if kids are at school and you're at work and something happens, how you communicate to each other, where you might meet, all of those things. The power goes out, cell phone goes out. How do you communicate with your family members in the event of a disaster? That's what we're talking about, national preparedness.
And then the go bag, what are the types of things you recommend people to include in that?
Oh my goodness. There's a long list, but you definitely want to have some clothes, some extra clothes. You definitely, I think, all of any medication, any extras, whether you wear glasses or contacts, any of the toiletries that you might want, something to read, extra cash, a flashlight, maybe a hat, definitely all of those things. And the purpose of a go bag is if all of a sudden you were asked or told to evacuate, you could grab a bag and you could have something for a couple of days. Maybe there's water in there. Maybe there's a couple of snacks in there. But if you were told to leave your home within 5 minutes, that you could just grab that bag and take off and go, okay, I've got something. And definitely that is a value. We also recommend you have those at work, because sometimes disasters don't happen when you're actually at home. So having that go bag with you at all times is really important. And you can personalize that bag. Absolutely.
And do you encourage families to write out their plans? Like, if you have to evacuate, this is where we're going to go. This is what we need to think about.
Yes, absolutely. Whether it's a communication plan or a place to meet, having that all written out. We have some great resources if you go to our webpage with community maps that you could lay out on the table and say, hey, this is where we want you to go. This is where we're going to meet. This is who you need to contact in case you can't get a hold of me because the cell towers are down or what have you. This is the steps, and the better that you prepare your family, the better during an event that you will recover from it.
How about, you know, house fires this time of year too? I mean, we kind of switch over from the vegetation fires to a lot more house fires and chimney fires and that type of thing. Just being prepared what you're going to do if unfortunately that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Having that separate plan. This is also fire prevention week. And it's really important that you're talking with your family members, you know, what to do in the event of a fire, how to get out of your house in the event of a fire, where to go in the event of a fire, etc. Absolutely. Making sure that you have a plan for that.
I know there's also a hazard mitigation plan that's been in development. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we are required, actually, as a county, to have a hazard mitigation plan. And this hazard mitigation plan was last updated in 2018 and then approved by FEMA in 2019. And they expire every 5 years. So we're in the process of updating that. And ours is a multi-hazard jurisdiction hazard mitigation plan, which means it doesn't cover just Tuolumne County as a government, but it involves multiple annexes from other entities, school districts, utilities, tribes, park and rec, all of those sanitation districts, all of those entities can join our city of Sonora as well, can join our hazard mitigation plan. This plan really looks at ways for us to mitigate the impacts of a disaster and what that plan is. We're currently updating it. We have a couple public meetings that are coming up. Our first will be October 26th. That's via Zoom at 5:30. You can go to our website and search hazard mitigation plan, and you'll see that information. We will also have one in November 16th, same Zoom, same time. And then we will do a in-person one in December at the Board of Supervisors Chambers, December 14th from 3 to 5 p.m. And we really want the public to engage. There is a survey that we want individuals to participate in, but this hazard mitigation plan is being worked on by all those entities currently right now.
I know after the March flooding events, we interviewed you about all the public property damage. Standard Park was closed, a lot of damage on private property. You know, at this point, you know, when it comes to the public, you know, impacts, have most of those now been resolved?
No, we are definitely still in the process. Both of those were declared disasters, and we are in the process with FEMA right now to do site inspections and all of the required documentation. In order for us to be eligible for any reimbursement. I will say the hazard mitigation plan is required to be approved by FEMA in order for us to get any of that funding, which is why those districts, schools, tribes are also part of the hazard mitigation plan, because they too have to be a part of an approved plan in order to get any funding reimbursed as a result of a disaster. So we're in the process still of doing that. We've had great successes with our FEMA partners in Cal OES, as well as all of the public entities who are putting in for reimbursement under those disasters.
FEMA was very public to heap praise on the county for the response following those storms. That had to be pleasing as a county for county officials.
Yeah, we have received multiple kudos from the FEMA representatives. And again, most of the FEMA folks that are coming here to Tuolumne County are coming from other states, you know, Maryland, Louisiana, Texas, Florida. So they've seen disasters all over the world. And they have been very complimentary to how we are organized as a county, how our documentation is ready to go when they request it, as well as our GIS dashboard. I have to do a plug for our county GIS team that created a great dashboard of damages, locations, and very easy for them to follow. So they are very happy, and it makes it easier for us to put requests in for reimbursements because everything is there.
We've been talking to Dori Beetz, the Assistant Director of the Tuolumne County Office of Emergency Services. Dori, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We thank Dory Beats, who with the Office of Emergency Services, getting us up to speed, looking ahead to the winter months and also looking back on preparedness and talking about various sirens going online in Tuolumne County. A programming note, next week on Motherlode Views, we're going to be talking with some officials with Adventist Health Sonora. They're going to fill us in on some items related to the cancer center, oncology here in the community, and also diabetes prevention. They've got some events coming up and some new initiatives. So that'll be next week on Motherlode Views. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.